I'm a veterinarian, sure, but I'm way more than that. I am also a tango dancer, a struggling but determined pie maker, and a mom. With IndieVets, I get to choose when and where I work. I create my own schedule and choose shifts at nearby animal hospitals that are right for me. Having that flexibility is exactly what I need to have plenty of time for all those other things that I am. Because I'm more than just a vet. Visit IndieVets.com to learn more and apply.
Welcome back to the IndieVets Happy Hour. I'm your host, Dr. Andrew Heller, DVM, and I'm so happy to announce that my co-host is back.
Woo, I'm back.
Dr. Marissa Brunetti.
BMD. Happy to be back. Thank you.
Today we have a special guest. This is her second time on this show. Her name is Dr. Anita Patel, and I can also say she's a DVM.
Yes. Woo.
Fine. Two-thirds are DVMs today. It's fine.
All right, guys. We are, again, recording this before the end of the day. It's around 2 o'clock. So therefore, drinks. Anybody doing any drinks? Marissa, I see you drinking water.
I'm going to share with everyone that last night, there's a whiskey distillery in Phoenixville, Pennsylvania. It's called Bluebird Distillery, by the way, everyone out there. And they make a winter whiskey. So I just want everyone to know that if you heat up your apple cider and you put your winter whiskey in it with like a sprig of rosemary, it's the best winter drink ever. So I had a few of those last night, and hence why I'm not drinking today. So I'm just just saying. It was still local.
You're excused. I don't know what that means to be a winter whiskey. I feel like
it was brewed with spices and pears.
Ah, gotcha. Mm-hmm, all right. Mm-hmm. That sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Sounds
Distilled with spices and pears.
All right, Anita, what are you drinking, if anything?
I actually have something from Philly that Amy Lloyd told me about when I was there, and I came home with a case of it, and it's Trogues. Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
It's the Mad Trogues. Elf.
Oh, that's Marissa's favorite.
You know that's my favorite.
Yeah. Oh. So she likes. Amy was telling me all about it and how you can age it for a year, and it's sweeter in a year, so I saved half, and then we dug into the other half.
I'm so happy. Do you like it?
Yes. It's so delicious.
And you only need one. Which is great.
It's a heavy beer.
It's heavy.
I'm not as cool as you, Anita, and I'm definitely cooler than you, Marissa, because at least I'm having something. But I'm just drinking Corona.
Oh my gosh, you're the worst. You
know, I was just gonna say, like, it's the middle of the day. I can't do something heavy. You know, something light.
I'm gonna ship you some really like 4% lagers that are local to you, so you can stop drinking Corona Extra, please.
Okay. All right.
Anyway. All right. What are we talking about today, Andrew?
So we are back with our breed series. This is going to be the second part. Last time we did Golden Retrievers. This time we are doing, drumroll please, Cavalier King Charles Spaniel. And Anita's here because she just loves the breed.
They're the best.
They are. They are so sweet. I love this breed. Actually, they're the 15th most popular breed in the United States. I'd put them higher.
Yeah, I thought they would be higher, but okay, 15th. And so with every breed we're doing, we're kind of breaking it down into categories, right? So we think it's cool to know the history. Andrew always finds some cool tidbits about the breed. So we'll go through the history of the breed. We'll go through predisposing diseases or issues for the breed, and then any tips and tricks if you have a client that breeds Cavaliers or you breed Cavaliers, and then emphasizing like things to keep them healthy. So we will start with the history, which I'm extremely interested in, that Andrew found. So Andrew, tell us about the history of the Cavy.
Well, the Cavalier King Charles, first we must say, you should not confuse it with the King Charles Spaniel. They are two different breeds, although they're very, very close. The King Charles Spaniel is smaller, but the Cavalier King Charles wears his connection to British history in his breed's name. Cavaliers are the best of two worlds, combining the gentle attentiveness of a toy breed with the verve and athleticism of a sporting spaniel.
Verve? Yeah, I would definitely consider them sporting.
I was saying before, I think I should say this in a British accent. It would make more sense. But anyway, the Cavalier's all-around beauty, regal grace, and even temper mark him as one of Kingdom's noblemen. A toy spaniel no more than 13 inches high, the Cavalier draws you in with his face. The sweet, gentle, melting expression emanating from large, round eyes is a breed hallmark.
Wow. This sounds like a PBS, like WHYY,
seriously,
like podcast that we're doing.
I loved it, so I had to include it.
All right.
They have silky, rich-colored coats, That can be one of four distinct varieties. The Blenheim, which is the chestnut and white. That's the one I think that's most common. Mm-hmm. The tricolor, which is black, white, and tan. There's the black and tan and the ruby. Cavaliers are aristocrats, but they gladly descend from their royal high horse for a backyard frolic or a squirrel chase. I won't get into too much about their personalities, but they're really sweet. They originated back in the late 17th century. They were interbred with flat-nosed breeds, and until the 1920s, they shared the same history as that smaller King Charles Spaniel. We also call that the English Toy Spaniel. Interestingly, they didn't come to the United States until the 1950s, and not until 1995 were they recognized by the AKC. Hmm. And now, as I said, they are the 15th most popular breed in the U.S.
How long do they live for?
8 to 12 years.
That seemed really low, actually. I was looking at that. But I guess with their heart disease that we will talk about.
Yeah, I was going to say, I kind of thought they were all around 10 years, actually.
So yeah, I guess that works.
Yeah, that was what I thought. We're going to talk a lot about all their common conditions, mainly they're genetically predisposed. And one of the reasons is because all Cavaliers today are descendant from one of six original Cavaliers. So they've got kind of messed up genes, unfortunately. And this is really interesting. I saw this year, 2022, Norway actually banned their breeding for violating their Animal Welfare Act. They felt that it was not fair to the species to keep on breeding them, given all their issues. All right, well, let's start off with some of the common conditions. I think the big one everybody can kind of say out loud. Anita, why don't you tell us what you think of for Cavaliers when you think of common disease?
Heart disease. They love getting mitral valve disease. And they're actually, just by being born a Cavalier, automatically stage A heart disease because it's so common.
I didn't know that, actually.
Yes. Yeah, I didn't know that either. I know that it's so common that by 5 years of age, 50% of them will already have it, some form of the disease.
Yeah.
Now, I wonder if that means that like it's detectable with a heart murmur by 5 years.
Yes. And then by 10, typically 100% of them have it.
Yeah, I didn't realize that it was 100%. I knew it was high. I didn't realize it was basically all.
Yes, yeah.
Very few things that we can say, like, we guarantee that your dog is going to have this by 10 years of age if they make it that far. So, wow, that's crazy.
I know. At least it's a very manageable disease, though, and we know to expect it early, so you can start doing appropriate lifestyle changes early if needed.
Yeah, that's true. What do you recommend? I know you see a lot of these guys.
Yeah, I mean, I typically have like a big nutrition talk with them. So Tufts Cumming School of Veterinary Medicine has like forever had this list of over-the-counter foods that are lower in sodium and are really good for heart health. And they're just like your mainstream diet. So like Purina, Royal Canin, Hill's. And they're all ones you can get dry and like wet or canned versions of it that you can get over the counter with like a bunch of different age ranges. And then Royal Canin also makes breed specific food for both puppies and adult Cavaliers, which is nice. And it's just an easy way to give owners something that's like affordable. They can get it over the counter. And so I feel like you get more compliance and can start that early.
Yeah. And even like talking to puppy owners, right, about like, I know it sounds sad to talk about heart disease, like on a first puppy visit, but I know that's good for them to like keep in mind and keep track of. And maybe they will come back twice a year. And you know, so we can listen to their hearts and make sure they're doing what they need.
Do you ever find that your clients didn't know to expect heart disease?
Yes. All the time. Oh, surprisingly. Gosh.
Yeah. It's really crazy. In terms of treatment, you know, I know this is not a discussion about heart failure and heart disease, but when would you guys start a Cavalier on pimobendan? You know, I know there's a lot of controversy about when to start.
8 weeks of age. Just kidding.
Yeah, I mean, would you go by grade of heart murmur? Would you go by grade from an echo? Would you just wait until they're in failure? What's your thought on this one?
Well, I think a lot of it depends on like what the client is able to do. You know, obviously, if they're able to do like blood pressure and x-rays and echo, that's ideal. And you get a better indication of when to start. But, you know, they've released the version of pimobendan that you can actually start like prior to actual heart failure. And they talk about checking blood pressure and doing x-rays and starting it. If you're starting to see certain changes on x-rays, like if you're starting to see an increased vertebral heart score, things like that, and you can start it a lot earlier than we traditionally used to start pimobendan. I mean, it used to be you don't start it until they're in failure, and that thought has changed.
Yeah, and I think that that's excellent when I heard that, because a lot of the times people will be like, well, why am I going to do an echo, or why am I going to do this? There's nothing I can do about it, right? And now you can actually say, yeah, there may be something to help and prolong, you know, a disease-free interval in your pet, which I love. And people are like, oh, okay. So I think it helps people do more diagnostics and keep track of it more so.
Yeah, definitely.
And when we talk about responsible breeding, we'll talk a little bit about how to do that, especially given that every tabby will eventually get this.
Yeah.
We'll talk a little bit about the recommendations later on. So let's talk about the second condition that's extremely common, unfortunately, in tabbies, syringomyelia. Mm. Marissa, what can you tell us about this disease?
It's such a head-scratching disease.
Anyway,
thank you. This has always been such a weird disease for me. I remember like my second year as a vet, I saw a cavi with this and I was like, what is it doing? But anyway, this is a painful disease. It's caused by a Chiari malformation of the foramen magnum in the back of the skull. Obviously, this causes a reduced space for the brain, causing it to herniate through the foramen magnum and blocking the CSF. Can you believe that 90% of calves have this malformation, although most of are asymptomatic?
Yeah. Have you seen this before?
I actually have. They can show up as early as 6 months of age, but by up to 4 years of age, you'll usually see symptoms. They're usually sensitive around the head, neck, or shoulders. And people will sometimes think their dog has an ear infection because they'll like be scratching at the side of their ear or their side of their neck, which is how I saw my first case. Because when I looked at this dog's ears, they were perfect and I could not figure it out. But I was a baby vet. But scratching is usually one-sided. And the scratching moments are, you know, basically like they could be air scratching too, right? They don't even have to make contact with anything. So it can look a little bit weird and it can be confused for ear infections.
And commonly you'll see them do it while they're walking.
Yeah, super weird.
And they don't even stop. They just kind of, it's like a bunny hop.
Yeah. How do you diagnose it?
Well, you got to have an MRI. I mean, you know, everybody has an MRI. You got to just have an MRI. basically, you're going to send this one on to a neurologist. They're going to do the MRI, and they're going to talk treatments with that owner. Unfortunately, surgery is not a great outcome. 50% of dogs treated surgically will actually decline by 2.5 years post-op. So it doesn't have the greatest outcomes. Generally, treating this disease is going to be pain control. You know, it is a painful disease. We were talking a little bit about some other medications that people use, whether or not they work or not. Anita, what was the one that you usually use?
Omeprazole, because it helps to work at like the proton pumps and inhibits them. And the thought is that maybe it reduces the CSF. I don't know that it's been proven. So I think that's one of those more like anecdotal sort of treatments. And it may be falling out of favor.
Yeah, I think we saw there was a recent study, but it was a really small amount. It was a really small N, but it showed no improvement with treatment of omeprazole. So, I mean, I don't think it can hurt. I think the only thing that to keep in mind, which we were just chatting about, is that it can reduce the bioavailability of gabapentin if you are using that as your pain control, which I also didn't know, but makes sense when you think about it.
Yeah, for like the neuropathic pain.
Yeah.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I know that sometimes we recommend removing the collar. The dog, since, you know, they're theoretically could be neck pain, and also like raising their feeding bowls, their water bowls and their food bowls.
Yeah, walk them on a harness. Don't walk them on the collar, that sort of thing.
Actually, I feel like I always see Cavaliers in harnesses.
Maybe that's because their vets are really smart and they told their owners that since they were puppies.
That's so smart.
There you go.
So smart.
Well, I'm interested to hear Anita talk about a very interesting disease of Cavaliers, episodic falling. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so this is an exercise-induced paroxysmal hypertonicity, which is a neurological genetic disease. There is a genetic test available, so if you're suspicious that this may be happening, there is testing that you can do. Episodicfalling.com links to the DNA test, so, you know, there's at least a way to test for it and and figure out if this is what you're seeing. It can be misdiagnosed as epilepsy, which makes sense.
Yeah.
And typically, they're about 4 months to 4 years old when we're seeing this. And of the cavies, you basically have about 19% that are carriers and 1% actually have the disease because it is a recessive disease.
So. Yeah, I don't know if I've ever seen this. Have you seen this?
I haven't.
I have not. Anita, are there any treatments for this weird disease?
Very few. I think it's mentioned vitamin E and tryptophan have been reported to sometimes reduce the frequency and severity of the episodes. I don't know that it completely gets rid of the episodes, but it's almost better to just prevent excitement, stress, or any sort of strenuous exercise that would trigger an episode.
So weird.
Yeah.
It's like fainting goats, cavaliers.
Yeah.
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 Interesting.
All right, well, why don't I talk about macrothrombocytopenia since I just mentioned it.
Yeah.
This is something that affects 33% of cavaliers. So 1 in 3 will have large platelets. What usually happens is you do a CBC, you see that the platelet count is low, you do a smear, and you see these big platelets. And you say, uh-oh, what does this mean? You know, my dog's about to go under anesthesia and we're about to cut him or, you know, whatever. And you start worrying, oh my gosh, is this going to be a bleeding issue? The good news is it's not a bleeding issue. Big platelets, but few of them, can do just as good a job as many small platelets. So
yeah.
This has been studied. We now know this. Carry on with surgery as planned.
Yeah, that's a weird one. I remember seeing that for the first time too. But yes, they function normally.
The first time I saw it was in our clinical channel. Somebody asked this question. And so I went and looked it up and I was like, oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is where like annual blood work's nice too. Cause then you're like, oh, this dog's, you know, you can like follow the trends and see if like what's normal for that dog has changed over years. And if it ever becomes a concern.
It's a good point.
I'm sure I learned about this in ClinPath back in vet school. And it was like in one ear out the other, right? Like, it's like, oh yeah, I'll probably never see this, you know?
Speaking of ears, do cavaliers have any issues with ears?
Oh my goodness. They do. They do. They get something called primary secretory otitis media, or glue ear. Have you guys seen this one?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Well, tell us what it looks like, Marissa.
Well, it's gross, but really, like, there's this like highly viscous mucus plug, and it fills the dog's middle ear, and you may be able to see the tympanum, like, bulging. It may affect up to 50%, which seems like a high percentage, and I think we may just be missing this a lot, or maybe this is wrong. I don't know. 50% seems like a really high percentage.
Yeah, I mean, I know that spaniels in general have a lot of ear problems, so it doesn't surprise me that cavalier spaniels do. I don't know if I've ever diagnosed this, to be honest with you.
But it is a good point because, you know, like I said, with syringomyelia, they'll be scratching. So I guess those would be your two top differentials in a cavy, right? You have syringomyelia or you have glue ear.
Exactly.
Or exactly. I guess you could just have regular otitis externa, which we also do see in cavies because they can get allergies as well. So,
yeah, but that's so boring. That's not as interesting as PSOM.
PSOM. All right.
But unfortunately, the treatment is not that simple. You got to do a meningotomy. You got to flush out that middle ear. And unfortunately, sometimes you have to do multiple treatments.
Yeah. So
it's something that's lifelong, unfortunately.
Yeah. It doesn't sound like, it sounds inflammatory, but is there a bacterial component?
I didn't see that in my research.
I know. I didn't think so either. So I guess that's good. Well, sticking with, you know, ears, hearing loss can be more common in this breed too. Caused by degenerative auditory nerve, which I thought was interesting. But also, Anita, what kind of orthopedic stuff should we look out for in these dogs?
So we definitely see hip dysplasia in this breed. They're the 78th worst breed out of 157 when it comes to hip dysplasia. And you can't, unfortunately, it's not one of those things where owners can come in and like in puppyhood, we can diagnose this necessarily. I think a lot of times we don't see it until maturity. And then the other thing we see pretty commonly, which I'm sure all of us have seen, is luxating patellas with cavies.
Yeah.
Super common and something that can be found on like routine exam. But most of them are low grade, so we're not necessarily doing surgery in all of these. I think that's where it comes in. Kind of important to do like preventative things like joint supplements and talk to owners about exercise and ways to keep the joints healthy. long term.
It's so funny. I don't think about cavies and hip dysplasia, but now I'm going to. I definitely think about luxating patellas more.
Yeah.
Yeah. It seems like cavaliers are designed to just sit on your lap and do nothing, right? You don't want them. You don't want them exercising, or they might just fall over. Mm-hmm.
Just pet them. Patellar issues.
Yeah, just pet them, kiss them, you know, that kind of thing. Look into their eyes. Which
Speaking
brings
of
us
eyes.
To... Great
segue. Look into their sweet, gentle eyes that are all gooey. But honestly, though, cavies do have some bulgy little eyeballs. So what can we see? What can we see in cavy eyes?
You know, let's just list them. About 30% of cavaliers will have keratoconjunctivitis seca, KCS, cataracts, corneal dystrophy, and retinal dysplasia. So those are the four main, most common ophthalmic diseases that will affect them.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of KCS in cavities.
Yeah, make sure you do a good orthopedic exam, make sure you do a really good ophthalmic exam, ear exam, and heart exam.
Yes. All right, so what would you tell, you have a client come in and they want to breed their cavaliers. Obviously, we're first going to start with the story of how all cavaliers came from six cavaliers. We'll tell that story first. And then what are we going to tell them to be responsible breeders?
Well, I think that we should start with the heart, right? Considering it affects 100% of them, we're trying to get breed this out of them eventually. And so the best way to do that, it's recommended that a cardiologist screen them and at 2.5 years old, be free of heart disease. And in this particular breed, it's important to look at the grandparents as well, or the parents of the breeding dogs. If they are, you know, heart disease free at 5 years old, you should feel good about breeding that dog. In terms of the heart, right? There's some other things too, which we'll just talk about now. But yeah, that's interesting to me. So I guess the idea is that we're pushing it later and later and later into their life, and eventually we can hopefully breed this out of them.
What else?
You know, we talked a little bit about their hips. So getting hip certified and sending those results to the OFA, you can do a pen hip. There are other ways we talked about on the Golden Retriever episode about how to examine the hips. And CERF rated, that's the CERF ophthalmology certification. You should have a normal rating as well by them. And no evidence of patellar luxation. That doesn't have to be done by a specialist. Anybody can feel for that.
Yeah.
We have one breeder at one of the hospitals that I work at where she will like go above what minimum standards are for breeding. So she brought a puppy in that had corneal dystrophy, and technically you can still breed them and it's fine. But she was like, no, I'm absolutely not breeding them. And she like goes above and beyond. So
great.
There you go.
I love that. I love responsible breeders.
Yes.
All right. Well, last but not least, we kind of touched on all of this, but let's kind of keep it in this short list. But, you know, what are some things preventative wise that you can do to keep your calves healthy?
Well, Anita, you talked a little bit about special diets for them. So I think that we've touched on.
Yeah.
We've touched on a little bit of the exercise issue. If they have the episodic falling issue, you have to reduce their exercise. But unfortunately, we see a lot of obesity in this breed. So, you know, healthy weight management is really important. And obviously that comes with moderate exercise as well, if they can handle that. Anita, what do you think about grooming? I know you have a lot of ideas here.
I mean, I think maintenance is really important with cavies. You know, obviously you need like your monthly grooming that would need to be done, where you're like clipping them down and things like that. But most of my cavy owners are really good about brushing them out and trimming their paws at home, because those tend to grow, that hair grip tends to grow pretty fast and gets matted pretty easily. And it also helps just kind of keep them shiny and healthy if you're brushing them regularly and spreading those natural oils. And then cleaning their ears and just getting them used to that from a young age, so that you're not battling them their whole life and making sure that their ears are staying healthy, I think are the two biggest things.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
That's awesome. And obviously, we are a big proponent of yearly testing. Obviously, as they get older, probably twice yearly testing, and echocardiograms, obviously, and monitoring for heart disease are really important. But yeah, they're great dogs.
They are.
They do have some issues, but they are really great dogs.
At least you know what you're walking into, hopefully, with a cavy, you know?
That's true. That is true. Yeah.
They have a short list, but it's a deep list.
Deep. Yes. It's a deep short list.
It's a deep short list. All right.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much for being here, Anita.
It's always a pleasure having you.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, absolutely. We can't wait to have you back for your second favorite breed, whatever that may be.
All right. Well, we hope you enjoyed this episode on the Indie Vets Happy Hour. Thank you so much for listening. Tell your friends, your vet friends, tech friends, or just the general public. And if you like us, leave us a 5-star review and make sure to subscribe so you can be alerted whenever we have a new episode. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions for future episodes, you can email us at clinical@indievets.com.
Also, to learn more about us and how we're making vet med better, head to indievets.com. That's IndeVets.com. While you're there, be sure to head to our blog for the latest stories and tips from our doctors. And also, don't forget Andrew Heller is a TikTok phenomenon. The end. Cheers!